There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1027. Hey, if you're going to be in and around Irvine, California, November 15 or 16, I'll be at the Irvine Improv. You know, you can just fly into John Wayne Airport if you're coming in from out of town. Just land right there. You're in Orange County, go to Irvine. Come on out. I'll be doing four shows there, I think. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. And then also in December, I'm clicking through the calendar. Here it is. December 12th, 13th, 14th, I'll be at the Tacoma Comedy Club in Tacoma, Washington. If you go to id10t.com/tour, you can get info about that. And then just hang out there because we have a bunch of new stuff. And we're going to add a vintage section too. I handpicked a bunch of vintage shirts that I wanted to wear and then decided I do not have room for more vintage shirts. So I'm going to put them on the site. Hopefully you will enjoy those. I also want to talk about one other piece of podcast business, which is that... it's been requested by a lot of sponsors that we start inserting some sponsorships in the middle of the show. This is becoming kind of an industry standard in podcasting, and we are going to respect that. We have to respect what our sponsors are asking for because they help keep this rusty bucket afloat, and they are make it possible for us to keep our staff, which is an amazing staff of five people who work behind the scenes to deliver these podcasts each and every week. So, we're not trying to bum you out, not trying to interrupt the flow of anything. We will always find like a natural place to insert it, a natural break in the conversation. These aren't going to sound like radio commercials with crazy sound effects and pre-recorded jingles and stuff. It'll just be same as it was before, just me talking about things, except that, you know, sometimes I do it at the beginning of the podcast or the end, and now there might be some in the middle. This won't be all the time, every time, but it will happen from time to time. And so I just wanted to give you a heads up and let you know that we are certainly not trying to take advantage of your time or, you know, radically change the way the podcast is done or anything. But we appreciate our sponsor support. We hope you'll support them as well. So they'll keep coming back so we can keep making these because they're fun. And speaking of support, I can't thank you enough for yours, whether this is your first podcast or you've been listening for a little while or even going back to all the way to 2010. Again, it's still, after all this time, it still means the world to me that you would take time out of your day when there's so much media that you could be filling your eyes and ears with to take up your time that you would carry this podcast around with you. So again, thank you so, so, so much. Let's get down to this episode, which is Willem Dafoe returning. He was on the podcast years ago. Before I was aware that this would be a podcast where I would talk to people other than just people who were my friends. And so he was phenomenal. He was great the first time. I don't know, it was probably like 7 years ago that he was on, 8 years ago maybe. This time, there are so many nuggets of Willem wisdom in here that I actually am going to go back and try to clip some out. And maybe just post them on Instagram, you know, in stories or something, because there's so many. I've listened to it a couple times, like, I gotta write that down. Oh my gosh, I have to write that down. So I was really blown away by him, and I hope that you will be too. I expect that you will be as well. So let's just get into it. He's promoting The Lighthouse, which is in theaters in limited cities now. It'll be opening wide October 25th. It's a beautifully cool movie directed by Robert Eggers, who did The Witch. It's Willem and Robert Pattinson, who are basically stuck in a lighthouse, and the stuff that happens with them is super trippy, and it's beautifully shot. So I definitely recommend that you go see The Lighthouse. And now here's episode number 1027 of the ID10T podcast with Willem Dafoe. Yes, I understand I've already enjoyed some Dafoe, but I would like to enjoy seconds, please. Thank you.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Oh my gosh, what a snazzy little room we're in here.
Yeah.
I've never been in these things before.
Me neither.
Yeah, just because, I think because of your press, you must be doing a lot of press on the West Side today.
Yeah.
So
they said, could you do it here? Right?
A24 put us in WeWork, which I hope is still here next week or the week after, because this little room is like, it's a specifically like a podcast recording room.
Ah, yeah.
It's not that bad.
No.
I don't know. I would be shocked if you remembered this, but maybe 8 or 9 years ago, you did this podcast and I came to your hotel at the Chateau. I came to your room.
Okay.
And we recorded, and you were the first guest who was not like just one of my friends that did the podcast.
Uh-huh.
And I was so nervous.
Oh, wow.
And you were great.
Ah, good. Well, let's hope I hope we're good today.
Well, it was the first time where I was like, it was so surreal because I was in your hotel room and then you sat down. And I was like, what the fuck am I? How did I get?
Cool. So yeah. Is that when you first started?
Yeah, it was about, I don't know, it was maybe a year after. But up to that point, it was just like, oh, my friends, other comedians.
And excellent.
It was
like,
fuck,
excellent.
Willem Dafoe, really? Holy shit.
Ah, cool.
This is serious.
That's good to hear.
How's it been going so far?
Good, good. Yeah. I'm really excited about this movie, The Lighthouse.
How long did it take you guys to shoot that?
I know because I get asked that question, and I looked it up. 35 days.
35 days.
Yeah, which isn't a lot and isn't little. And it was a good – It wasn't a fat schedule, and it wasn't rush.
Yeah. The movie's really cool. I got to see it maybe about a week ago.
Okay.
How do you – I was trying to figure out like – because I know that – I know Robert Eggers also did The Witch.
Yep.
Which was another stunning movie. How was this movie pitched to you? Like how do you even describe this movie?
Okay. Back up a second. The Witch, I went to see it. I knew nothing about it. I saw it and I said, wow, whoever made this is a good filmmaker.
Yeah.
Because just about the world was created and it looked beautiful and I liked how he dealt with the story. I thought, who is this person that made this? So I met him and he knew my theater work. He knew film work. He comes from the theater and we hit it off very well and we said, let's try to find something. So with a little time, he came one day and said, here, this is what we're going to do. It's going to be you and Rob Pattinson. Yes or no?
And that was
it. Very direct, yeah, because he already knew I wanted to work with him. And then once I read it, I thought, yeah, cool. Very elevated language, fun things to do. I knew he could make that world. I knew it would be an adventure to film, you know, rough weather. We were going to build the lighthouse. Everything you see in that movie is built.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Really beautiful.
Yeah. And it's also – and you're the lighthouse keeper is also a – he's a real character.
He is.
But like on the edge of – so how do you keep a character like that who really – could, like, there's a chance where maybe someone else playing that could have gone super like, arr, me
well,
matey, you know, but
that's
sort of where the language
mix.
Lives.
I mean, he's an archetype.
Yeah.
You know, one man's archetype is another man's cliche. what can I say? So you are in that territory, but you're also playing the scenes and you're finding it. I mean, that's the mask, but you also personalize that mask and you make it. You know, for example, the language is very, you know, it's very elevated.
Oh, yeah.
It's poetic.
Yeah.
It's coded. It's in a slang and it's almost poetry. And my job, of course, is to root it, you know, to make it work for the scene. So when I'm berating him, that language actually helps me because it's so articulate and it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're hitting some notes of familiarity, but then you're also trying to make them specific. I mean, you know, as I say, it's an archetype.
It is, but it's also there is an ensemble. I mean, I would imagine you obviously have to trust your other actor. You have to trust your director, especially when you're doing something that, you know, when it's explained like, okay, this, you know, there's a million ways this couldn't work and probably one or two ways where this could. Yeah. You really have to trust that guy.
But, you know, the relationships are so good in what happens. The story is very, very simple, and that's not even a spoiler. I mean, we can start off by saying it's an old lighthouse keeper, an old hand, and a new assistant who come to a lighthouse to serve their 4 weeks of manning the lighthouse. And when they're there, I kind of lord it over him because I'm all the old hand. I want to groom him to be a wiki like I am.
Yeah.
A wiki is the term that they use for a lighthouse keeper. But they don't get picked up. Bad weather comes because of
things.
Reason. Things. Spoiler. And they don't get picked up. And then they run out of food and they start to drink and things get scrambled and identities are lost and futures are not imagined and it gets crazy. But how that happens is very specific and very detailed. So that also saves you from, you know, a certain... It's articulate. The story is articulate, even though the story is kind of classic.
Yeah. Is it about, you think the movie's about isolation?
It's about lots of things. Because of its density and because of its how complex it is, I think different people are going to see different things. I mean, in the relationship that we have, the two characters, the older lighthouse keeper and the younger, you can see shades of all kinds of things. Father, son, a couple.
Right.
Lovers, you know, two men fighting for domination, you know, a believer and a non-believer, you know, two ways of living a life. All those things are in the mix. And different people are going to, whenever something I think is complete like that, people are going to see different things.
Yeah.
Depending on what they're interested
exactly.
in.
Exactly. I mean, I guess in a way there is a little bit of a Rorschach test. Like whatever inclination your personality has, you're probably going to see any number of those things.
Right.
And one of them is going to float to the top.
Right.
Is a movie, I don't know, is fun the right word? Is something like this
fun? I think
fun?
So. I think so because it transports you. And I think enough is going on that you can identify. And for me, I like movies that either make me forget something, remember something that I forgot, or take me to a place that makes me think in a different way.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, yeah, I never thought of it that way. Because that feeling, you know, is the feeling of wonder. It's the feeling of being alive. It's the feeling of fun.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not same old. You know, this is the rescue from the lockstep. And it's not always distraction. It's not always taking you away from your life. It's, in fact, directing your life because, watching this, you can't help but think about relationships. You can't help but think about what you would do in that situation.
Sure.
And I think that's exhilarating.
Is it? I mean, for you as a performer, is this type of experience when you're working? Is it fun, or do you just feel like no? In retrospect, it's fun, but when I'm there, it's like intense.
It's fun.
Oh, good.
It's fun, and even challenges are fun. And even though it's miserable weather, and you're cold, and you're unhappy in some ways, you're still a little tickled deep down that you're getting to inhabit these characters because, you know, part of it is, too, this isn't your regular life. So you're
right.
like, I dodged this bullet. I could be this guy. You know?
But you also just sort of – kind of coming off the idea of isolation because it is a movie that stays with you and, like, who would I become in that situation? I mean,
right.
Like, that's really where – You know, like people live their lives day to day and, you know, are able to sort of maintain whatever kind of, you know, I guess facade they want. That,
right.
But then when you put someone in a crisis or you isolate them, it's like
– their true nature happens. Without, you know, bending anyone towards an interpretation, this has a lot to do with identity.
Mm-hmm.
And when you strip people's identity away and you don't give them the familiar props that they need to mm-hmm. feel like they are who they are, something else happens and something gets revealed that's much closer to their true nature.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what happens here.
Yeah.
And it ain't pretty.
Well, also, you put two people on top of each other in close quarters for weeks. Yeah. And some, especially if they have strong personality types, it's probably gonna.
And one thing we haven't mentioned it. This is a film that's set in 1890s.
Yeah.
So the whole sensibility, the whole way of living, the whole everything's different.
And it's I think it would be. So much – the film is really great, but people should go see it in a theater because it's stunning to look at. First of all, it's in black and white, but it's shot – every frame looks like a photograph. And it's even – the aspect ratio is even almost like a square.
It is. It is. It's beautifully shot. They did a beautiful job. And when we rehearsed, you know, the camera was king because the cinema language was already clear. And they were doing things with lenses from the 30s, all these treatments.
Wow,
were shooting on film. It was very complicated, very ambitious. So that had to be worked out ahead of time. So, for example, we rehearsed for 5 days before.
Mm-hmm.
And normally that would be rehearsals for actors to figure out, kind of find their feet
sure.
and get comfortable with each other. No, it was us being told where the camera was so we could bend our blocking and our mm-hmm. actions and what we were interested in doing into the frame that they wanted.
Right, right, right.
So it was like a... We had to submit to the will of the camera. But that was cool because it was so beautifully worked out. And I was so interested in, how it was going to look.
And is that pretty much, you know, when you decide – because I would imagine you could probably – you probably have your pick of stuff that you could do if you wanted to. I mean, is that – is the challenge the thing that drives you? Is it, oh, I think I could bring something to this role? Is it the people? Like, what do you – how do you pick now?
It's always a mix of things, but very central is, you know, you spend a lot of time with these people. They better inspire you, and you better like being around them,
yeah.
you know? And as I said, I was really attracted to, what Robert Eggers was doing. And then Rob Pattinson, when I heard Rob Eggers wanted him to do it, I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
It was good casting. And
yeah,
I thought
it too.
It would be fun to work with him. And just everyone on the set, because they were all there. Rob Eggers worked with basically a lot of the same people that he worked with on The Witch. So it's like his team. So I think I am attracted to situations where there's a strong director with a very particular vision. And part of my job is to inhabit that vision, to find out, you know, to help them do what they do.
Yeah.
I become a creature for them. I become an extension of them. And part of the creative thing is to go towards their vision, make it my own in the respect of make it mine as well, and then be the manifestation of that.
Right.
So that's a cool job to have, which is a lot different than what a lot of people think, and that is that you play a role to interpret something. I want to have an experience.
Right.
I want to have an experience. I want to learn something, and I want to learn what's in your head, and then be that thing in your head.
Yeah.
And when you make that shift, that feels like creation.
Right.
That feels like you're having an experience that expands you. Expands you not in a egotistical way, but expands you in a contact with what you love,
right,
and what is really what is, in a much stronger way than you might if you're just working with what you know or what you need to express.
Right.
It extends you. You know, take someone else's point of view, someone else's impulses, someone else, what they're interested in, and make it your own. What happens is you have a shift.
It's interesting to hear you say the thing about because I think it was very intentional, the not in an egotistical way to expand, because I am fascinated by the allure of the ego. And I talk about it probably at the great boredom of people who listen to me talk about it, because – but I do think it's one of that – it's just sort of that weird human, maybe lizard brain thing that we contend with a lot in our lives. And as we get older, we start to – discover some separation from it. We don't have to do everything it says. We don't have to be, you know, enslaved by our own egos. And so it was just interesting to hear you say that, because I – do you find that that – because I think you're a yoga guy,
if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
And is that – has that been helpful to you? And how do you – how have you navigated that in your own life?
Problem of being a slave to an idea of identity and who you are.
Exactly, kind of branching off.
Well,
from
I have this great job where I get to play around with it. You know, the irony is, though, in the end, your job is also, you know, making yourself a thing.
Sure it is.
But that also holds your feet to the fire,
right?
Because it really forces you to deal with that. The idea of your branding yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But you try to resist that. You try to resist that by playing different roles and being in different kinds of situations.
Sure.
So I think it's one of the most essential things for an actor is to be flexible.
Right.
And not that doesn't mean range and versatility all the time. It just means ready to accept, you know, not to be rigid.
Right.
Not to be have one way. Always, for each project, find your way in a new way.
Right.
I think you know, that's why when people talk about a method or a particular way of working, I don't subscribe to that. And the truth is, I think most people don't.
Right. Because every situation is different.
Yeah.
Every character is different. Because I saw Motherless Brooklyn, too. I got to see that because Edward was on the podcast a couple weeks ago. And it was – you were great in that. And, you know, your characters do seem to have, even when they are a bit unhinged, as he was in moments, there is a centeredness and a certainty, I think, about you as a performer and what you're doing with each role. And I assume that's just the Willem of it all. Like, you're like that part of your soul is the connective tissue. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like a pretty grounded, certain person?
I don't know. I don't know. But I think one thing that I think of when you talk about that is the other day I was doing a talk with someone and he said something about clarity in actors is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I never hear that. And I think that's very true. And that clarity has to do with being with what is, and when you're doing actions, being committed in a way that you're not distracted. You're not getting ahead of yourself. You're not thinking about the effect. You're really putting yourself in that action. And then just the nature of the swirl of things is telling you what the next step is.
Right.
It's almost like nature and is participating in a way that you never could. And if you try to harness that too much, you squelch what's beautiful about impulse.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was very lucky that the way I started performing was with this company, the Wooster Group. And it was a theater company that was made up of poets, musicians, architects. It wasn't a theater of theater people.
Right.
And the approach was much closer to dance in that everything you did was seen as task. And also the technicians and the actors kind of switched jobs sometimes. actors were like technicians and technicians were like actors. So there was a pragmatism and a kind of devotion to the structure that you'd met.
Right.
And then you had to find a way to live inside that structure.
Right.
Where often, you know, people's perception of actors, it's all about emotion and invention. The truth is, that's not where it's at for me. It's about receiving and allowing things to happen.
Right. And do you feel that that principle is applicable in our lives, being able to receive and allow things to happen without trying to control outcomes and control how we feel?
I think you're a fool if you think you can control things. But you can control how you think about things.
Yes.
That you can.
Yes. That is a very Buddhist / Stoic, that kind of idea. And you see that idea in so many different philosophies.
Yeah. No.
Different versions of it.
Yeah. And I guess I'm showing my bloomers here. I'm always interested in where, you know, what the bottom line is, where all, religious thought, spiritual thought, creative thought connects.
Mm-hmm.
And as I get older, it's in my imagination, I think it's all connected. It's
sure.
all the same thing. It just expresses itself slightly
Absolutely.
Differently. So I think part of my work is being aware of and cultivating an understanding of what is that thing that makes us human.
Well, I mean, I imagine it's
you know,
just
what the dilemma is, what our strategies are, what to avoid, and what, keeps us alive rather than asleep.
Well, yeah, but I think it is also finding that balance between art and craft, between living freely but having to live within a structure.
Yep.
And that balance, I think, is, it's to me, it's sort of the great cosmic comedy of the universe, because I feel like by the time you really start to figure it out, it's like you've already lived most of it. You
right.
can't figure it out until you live a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
So how – are you comfortable sort of talking about your yoga practice at all?
I'm not so much, because I don't like to, It feels like you're if people have the practice, they have the practice. If they don't, you're talking about something like you have something they don't. I don't know.
Sure.
No, it's important, and I recommend asana practice to anyone. There are benefits for your health, for your peace of mind, for taking inventory of what the relationship is between your body and your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't feel comfortable because it's a practice.
It's a practice.
It's personal.
Yeah, and it's a personal thing, sure. Sure, but in as much as we grow and try to learn how to be, how have you – like what tools have you learned for, letting go when you feel your brain trying to grab on?
Well, it's real simple. I'll make it real simple. I've been practicing, pretty much every day for the last, 25 years.
Yep.
And that's something that I do every day that's like a ritual, like a devotion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a place that to order and to connect. And I feel like when I do that, I feel like, my work is done. The ambitious, the striving part of myself is kind of exhausted in that.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
And then the rest of the day is like fun and adventure. Then I go off to work.
That's really a great way to think about it, to occupy the busy part of your
brain. But having said that, I also wake up every morning and they say the hardest asana is throwing out the mat. It's mm-hmm. really true. I throw out that mat and I go, oh, God. Every day. And then also when I finish practice, every day I say, wow, I'm good.
Yeah.
I feel good, So imagine doing that every day. It roots you.
Of course.
It roots you. And it's like, I'm ready for anything.
Well,
throw it at me, baby.
Yeah, that's great because I think.
Which, I'm speaking relatively.
Within reason.
Ding. Yeah.
Within reason.
Lose my cell phone or something
fine.
Like that.
Yeah,
I'll be in a tizzy like anyone else.
Yeah, of course. But it is – I think it is good when people have a ritual that basically you're saying to yourself, I am worth this And even just that, gifting yourself that every day, making an effort toward your physical or mental health every day, does, I think, have deeper lasting effects, because you would have to be coming from a place of self-love and confidence if you're willing to give yourself that every day and put in the work when you don't feel like doing it.
And also with repetition, you say, okay, I'm one breath closer to the end.
Right.
Again.
Absolutely.
So it's a good – it engages a certain kind of meditation on you know, existential things in a very practical way.
Sure. And I think it's also funny that we – the other thing that it says is like, you know, what your brain tells you – isn't always necessarily the best thing for you. Don't do this. Stay in bed. What are you doing?
No, in fact, you know, culturally, we're so pushed to get everything now and get everything we want. And we're told that we can if we try hard enough.
Right.
So we got to beat that striving and we got to beat that now thing, because usually the now things are the things that aren't good for us in the end.
Right.
And the things that are hard for us now are usually the things that are good for us in the end.
Right.
So we got to ask backwards, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a big challenge.
It is. But I also wonder, you know, let's – not that I think the universe is a sentient being, but hypothetically if it were, those great rewards that you're talking about, that would almost be the test of the universe. If you can overcome this, then you will receive these rewards. And if you give in to those kind of, you know – temporary distractions from that path, then you get that life, you know? What do you think is a good way to balance – like what's healthy ambition? What do you think is healthy ambition?
Good question. I think that's individual. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, you know, when you ask that question, the only thing I think about is you have to keep a balance between between going for, you know, making an effort and reflection, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And ambition, you know, when it's too strong, you're not there anymore. You're always looking too much to the reward or where you want to go.
Right.
And if you're too slack, you never get your feet put to the fire, because you're kind of too reflective and you're not taking on anything more, and that can lead to a certain kind of neurosis.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's individual. That's just the way I think about it.
Right.
I'm a very ambitious person, you know, but I also recognize that ambition makes me sick sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, makes me not well, because you're looking for where you're going too much, and it's the old story, you know. It's like you know, making the trip and being so interested in, you know, taking the photographs at the sites that you don't experience them. That's the all.
Yeah.
That's all.
I mean, I don't mean to keep bringing up Buddhism. I'm not Buddhist, but I read it and I listen to it, and because I find it beautiful in, you know, the simplicity of it. But the idea of releasing expectations, expectations sort of being a path to frustration.
What I always think about is it goes back to your experience, what your true experience is. And, you know, those expectations are usually created by other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're glomming onto them, because
sure,
they give you a recipe for happiness that you're accepting, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that you got to beat. And now, trying to wrestle this back to acting and all this, I'll say that that's one of the pleasures. You try to take different points of view so you can kind of destruct your the one that you've created.
Sure.
For yourself.
Sure.
So it's always that it's an opportunity to disappear into someone else's experience.
Right.
The irony is to find out what your experience is.
And connect it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but because you have this with the Wooster Company, it sounded very
much. I mean, I had it. I haven't been there in many years. But I was 27 years with that company, and I think that really shaped, you know, how I think and how I approach making things.
Yeah, because I would imagine that is a pretty solid ensemble
It's a group of young people. There's two people that were there when I was there, but everyone else is dead because I was
there. Oh, wow.
I moved on because I was the youngest member of that group when I joined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you still looking at theater projects?
I do. I mean, I've worked with Robert Wilson, a couple of times on really beautiful major pieces, and Romeo Costolucci, and I worked with Richard Foreman, who's no longer making theater. But those are all people that are giants to my mind.
Yeah. What are you looking to do? Do you have your 2020 planned out already? Or do you just sort of take it
as a 2020? You say that and I think I better go to the optometrist pretty soon.
I know. We're in the future now, man. It's the friggin'
okay,
future.
Okay, got it. 2020. Listen, yeah, you know, I got. There was a time where I never liked to plan too much ahead of time because I was always afraid I'd get involved in a project, and then when I'd get to it, I'd think I don't really want to do this now. But things take care of themselves. Things don't come together too much in advance. I mean, so much revolves around work and planning.
Sure.
Work.
Sure. Because
that's where I live. I like to work.
Yeah.
And it gives me a lot of pleasure, and it's still a lot of fun. So that's what I think about. When you talk about 2020, I think about, oh, I want to do this, and then I want to do that. And
do you take time off? Do you?
No, time off happens naturally.
Got it.
Like right now, I'm not well, actually, I was shooting yesterday, but normally, right now in this period, I'm not shooting a feature.
Right.
I'm doing press for these movies coming up.
Yeah.
So it's work, but it's a little like time off.
You don't mind it so much?
No, I don't, because it's happened kind of organically, you know, and
yeah.
It's part of it. And it's like playing a role.
I guess that's true, yeah. Right?
But like, look, right now, we're talking. We've got the things we want, the things we're interested in. We're mixing it up, so it's creative. So I don't judge it and say, "Oh man, I'm really an actor, and I'm not here to, to bang the drum for this thing." But the truth is, I like this movie, for example. And I wanted to get out there, and I'm enjoying talking to you.
I appreciate that.
It's all
that.
Part of it. You know, it's like I try not to be down on anything.
Is there a
you
character?
You know what I mean?
Of
that
course.
I'm doing.
Of course. Yeah, but that's a good attitude, because it can be tedious, because sometimes people become actors because they don't want to have to talk as themselves. They like portraying other characters, and they like exploring that. And it just seems funny to me that we live in a time where there's so much media and so much of having to talk as yourself, and so many performers are on social media and they're talking. You know, it's just like a
yeah.
whole level
that
of access.
I don't do.
No, I don't
that's
blame you.
That's where I draw the line.
I can't imagine it.
But I can see why that's fun for some people. It's just not how my life is built.
Yeah, but it should be done because it's fun, but I definitely think there's a pressure now of like, oh, you got to do it because you got
to. But also, like, I do it also because I want to. I mean, I want movies to go well so I have opportunities in the future.
Of course.
You know? And also, if you make a beautiful movie, you like to share it. Not so you can become king of the world, but just it feels like a positive thing, like a contribution.
Yeah.
And you can never call it yours because it's a collaborative thing.
Sure.
You know? So I can talk about The Lighthouse. Yeah, I can talk about other people. I had a good time on it, you know? I mean, I'm proud of it. It's fun, and people appreciate it. So then the promotion all makes sense.
Yeah, and also just hearing you talk about that just sort of make me realize, like, yeah, it's not just mine. It's a group of people. But then once that group makes the thing and put it out, then it's not theirs anymore. Then it becomes
yep.
the audience, and it's up for interpretation.
Yeah, and it can have all kinds of life. That's one thing I've seen, you know, like really bad movies can be successes, and really good movies can get lost, you know?
Yeah.
So once it gets out there, how it gets out there, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. And again, that is also about just relinquishing control, because you have no control over the timing of when something comes out, how it's going to catch.
You do what you can. You know, you exercise whatever choice and power you want, you know, you can have.
Is there – do you
– We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Do you particularly identify with either one of the characters as an audience member, not as you who play the character? Is there one that you identify with a little bit more in the movie?
Just because I played him, I think I identify with my guy more.
I mean, he seemed...
And to talk any, you know, it's like, look, the one guy's an older guy, the other guy's a younger guy. And, you know, I think I just more identify with the guy's, you know, station in life more. I was a young guy. I'm not anymore, you know. But I, you know, but at the same time, I think, you know, I'm still one of these guys that is deluded to thinking he's 22 years old because I'm not falling apart yet. So
you got it. You got a 22-year-old's head of hair, man. I gotta say, you're a hair millionaire. You really scored in that area. You must feel good about that.
No, you should be thankful for any good news, I guess.
But it's, you know, the thing that's fun to watch about these two guys is that they're both, I mean, pretty much full of shit from the stories that they tell each other. And obviously you...
Well, that's nice, too, because you're not sure what's true and what's invention and what the strategies and how they're trying to work on each other.
Right.
So, you know, it's as complex as a Bergman film as far as the, you know, people's interactions with each other.
Yeah. I think truth is a good word because it is... Not only are you trying to work out what's true between the two of them, but even Eggers kind of fucks with the audience a little bit about what's true about what they're watching.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. And do you think that truth is one of those things that just – if you stare
at
something long enough – Yeah.
It's elastic. Like in this case, you know, do I know in this scene whether it's real or whether it's in their imagination? It doesn't matter because in the playing of the scene – It's real.
Right.
So you play that.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about directing or –
Not really.
No?
Not really. I mean, I still am so – I have a lot of fun and I'm still – it's so – performing is so mysterious in some ways and so familiar in other ways that I enjoy being a performer. And I enjoy attaching myself to a director and like – doing their bidding or you know, inhabiting something where it simply comes down to a director watches and the actor does.
Right.
And I'm more like a little kid that way. You know, think of Tom Sawyer, you know, I'm, you know, the painting the fence.
Yeah,
thing.
Exactly.
I'm like, I'm the guy that wants to paint the fence, you know, because, that's what I like to do, you know? And, yeah. And I also, being a director, I think you have to be a little more responsible than I like to be about what stuff means.
Sure.
Because you have to, he or she has to direct the ship, you know, because they've got the responsibility of all these people and they've got the responsibility of the money. I mean, I'm responsible, but somewhere deeply, I'm not responsible for what stuff means. I'm responsible for the truth of what I'm doing.
Right, right. That's a great way to put it. But also, in as much as each director, some directors might say, paint the fence exactly like this. And other directors might go, you know, paint the fence or don't, or paint it however
and
you
I'm
want.
And I'm good with either
you
one.
You really, you are.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's the world. I mean, you know, I don't think there's one way. And I'm interested in that. Different things are drawn out of you with different, you know, directing styles and different intentions for a movie. That's why I think I like to mix it up, not to be a little show off, or I'm not bored. I'm not an easily bored person at all, so I'm not doing it just to be titillated all the time. It really, I feel, feels more useful, you know?
Yeah.
There's more possibility for being awake and challenged, and challenged in a way that, you know, it's for me, it's so much about the quality of engagement. The mm-hmm. quality of engagement of what you're doing.
Whatever it is.
Whatever it is. And then outside of that, once you get that engagement, that and it's complete, then you can go all different kinds of places.
I think to achieve that engagement, you used another word a few minutes ago, curious.
Yeah.
Curiosity is a great way to enhance engagement.
Yeah, I think I'm still curious.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's...
Or I try to cultivate or encourage curiosity. Because this whole idea of, you know, getting away from your rigid playbook of who you are and what has to happen. And I think that's the thing. That's the, for me, that's the, if you can beat that, then you can live. You can live a full life. And, you know, I'm like a guinea pig, you know, when I'm in these stories. And how I'm there, how alive I am, is my contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's selfish because it's personal, because I want to be awake. But it's also, if I can find that way to be alive and people can, you know, be with me in that, then it's useful too.
Sure.
Because it elevates all of us.
Yeah.
That's why you tell stories that, you know, hopefully will illuminate or make something clear or inspire. And to be part of that, you get some on you too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm a crusader.
But the rigidity...
Then the other part is if you get too tight on that, then you do become, you know, sanctimonious, too serious. So then you go a little in that way, then you got to go back the other way.
Sure.
And that's when you go to the fart jokes. and that's when you say the funniest thing in the world is shit, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's part of it.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
It's all part. It doesn't have to be one or the other. But the rigidity, I think, is really important because the rigidity plays to that basic survival instinct that I think we have of safety and wanting to, you know, like, it's so weird. Humans want predictability, but also we crave unpredictability
yes,
at the same
true.
Time.
Yep. I'm with you.
Yeah. And so that, you know, when your brain is kind of saying, like, build a wall, stay rigid, stay safe. Even in the lighthouse, like, stay safe, board up the windows, you know.
You know that,
fighting that urge.
A lot of it is, you know, my character is a believer. And he's dedicated his life to this activity.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy's like a slacker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the tension from the beginning. You know, the guy's not coming forward. He's not really getting with the program. He's not a believer. That's where it starts.
Yeah. Were you watching dailies while you were shooting? Or
no.
Do you know you don't do that?
No. Not usually, unless the director wants me to look at something. But normally, I don't think you should because, yeah, you're pulling your punches then. You're thinking too much about the result. And also, if you like what you see, it doesn't help you.
Right.
If you don't like what you see, it doesn't help you.
Right.
Because it can either make you full of yourself and give you anxiety about continuing in that mode.
Sure.
Or you can lose your confidence. You can say, oh, this looks terrible. And I know for a fact sometimes things that look terrible or have problems, they can sometimes be turned into other things, you know.
Sure.
Not just by cutting and post, but, you know, you don't always know.
Right. Right.
I'm always impressed, particularly when you're making stuff, the stuff that you worry about is never the stuff you should be worrying about, you know? So don't try to be too controlling.
Right.
You know, I think so much has to do with, you know, a sincerity. And I'm not talking about a rigid sincerity, but a sense of purpose in how you're engaging again. I keep on using that word, but that really is it. A contact that's really about something, you know?
Right.
That's not pointing to something. It really is demanding to deal with what's in front of you.
Right. Right. But engagement also requires being a part of something and being connected to something, being connected to people, being connected to ideas rather than being sort of just stuck in ourselves.
And that's why, that's a nice thing about making films too. It's social, you know, and I think somewhere deeply we're such social animals that this desire to relate and share experience and express experience is very strong. So I think there's something in me. I think it's because maybe I grew up in a big family, you know? That sense of community, that sense of relating.
Right.
It's not, you know, it's about expressing.
Yeah.
You know, expressing your experience.
Yeah. But also, I mean.
I like a quote, this Scalambro, Italian philosopher, he says, insects communicate, humans express.
That's a great way to think about it. Because if you're communicating or if you're just saying things, you're really just, in a way, kind of just talking about yourself as opposed to listening and expressing and connecting.
Right.
But
and
again,
it's not all about function.
Right, right. There's form.
Because, yeah.
There's absolutely form. But I think that actors... It's such an interesting lifestyle because you worked on this movie for 35 days. You work in close proximity to all these people. You form a very short – basically, you know it's a community that has an expiration date on it.
And
so
– Nomads.
It's, yeah, in a way, yeah. And so you open up and become very vulnerable to this very small group of people time and time and time again. Do you ever – is it just more that when you think about stuff you're working, go, oh, that was a really nice group of people, or, fuck, you know, I really like that group, but who has time to, like, how do you stay connected when you're constantly connected?
You probably don't because you're on to the next thing.
Of course.
And everyone that's busy is always moving around, you know. You feel like you're in the Foreign Legion, you know.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so.
I like that.
I mean, do you are there people that you still stay in contact with, or is it just one of those like, oh, you run into someone and go, oh, I really want to have lunch with that guy, and then 2 years go by, you go, fuck, I still never saw that guy.
That happens.
Yeah.
But that happens also because I travel so much in
work.
Because also, I don't know how well you know my filmography, but I've lived it, and I'm impressed how many different places I've shot. I travel around a lot.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to maintain, so you know, relationships and social contact.
Right.
You know, when you're not in the same place all the time.
Sure.
So what you described, now I'm in New York much less because I married an Italian and I live in Rome some. I still live in New York as well, but... Between work and having two places that I live, it's amazing that I can know someone fairly well that also works and travels a lot, and I won't see them for 5 years.
Right.
And I still feel connected to them, but time goes like that.
It feels
that.
Like a month.
And then when you're my age, if they're older than you particularly— You miss 5 years, and it's like,
shit.
No, you say, wow.
You're 80? Holy fuck. How did that happen?
Yeah.
I better not miss another 5 years.
One of my favorite lines in Last Temptation, maybe this is too weird.
I already like where this is going.
No, no. But it's in a flashback, not a flashback, flash forward sequence when they're all old.
Yeah.
In a fantasy sequence, you know? And someone says... I'm going to blow it because I don't say – it doesn't matter who says who, but they say, what happened? And someone says, we got old.
Oh, my God. Yeah, of course. And just knowing that for as long as –
Damn, I did not do that well.
You're just quoting it. You don't have to perform it. But it's the idea that no matter how unique we feel, no matter how unique our problems feel, no matter how like – oh, but no other time is like this time. It's like the same things repeat over and over. And you talk about that, or you read stuff that Marcus Aurelius wrote 2,000 years ago, and you're like,
love to happen.
Yeah, it's like fuck it. What? It's all the same stuff. We're just always dealing with the same stuff over and over again.
That's a love to happen. That's a Marcus Aurelius.
That's a Marcus Aurelius. Did you read? Have you read Meditations? And you read all of the.
When I was young. But now I read Entertainment Weekly.
Entertainment Weekly is my Meditations. That's how I work it. I love, my wife and I were in it. We went to Italy in May, and it's just stunning.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning. Rome, is Rome your favorite part of Italy?
Or Rome
do you,
is where I live.
It's where you live, yeah. But do you travel to other parts as well?
Yeah, Italians travel.
Yeah.
In their own country and elsewhere. But the incredible thing about Italy is you got to remember they're a younger country than we are.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
they
I guess so. Because of that.
Until the time pretty much of our Civil War.
Right. When you look at it, you think, oh, the civilization is really
And as
old.
I get to know Italy more and I travel in Italy more, the regional differences are still quite distinct.
Oh,
you know, in terms of when I first started learning Italian, sometimes I'd say to my wife, that guy, I can't understand him. And my wife would say, William, because he doesn't speak Italian.
Right.
And I'd say, I still can't imitate my wife. What's that about? I'm an actor. I should be able to.
I don't think it's a good. I don't think any
I
wife
can do
wants
lots
to be
of
imitated.
Accents, but I can't do a good Italian accent. But anyway, and particularly, I can't imitate my wife. That's, really, what's that
it's
about?
It's probably better
I
for your marriage not to imitate your wife.
I'm not an actor. But she'll say, "Yeah, because he doesn't speak good Italian." I'm
right.
saying he's Italian. No, because he's used to speaking dialect.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so. All the regional differences are really interesting, which is great because, their culture gets – their local culture gets preserved. So food is different from, different areas, and I love traveling within Italy as well.
Yeah, I speak Italian, and so
well,
sì, io parlo italiano, ho studiato italiano. Oh, grazie.
So perché?
Perché la mia famiglia è italiana, like bisnonne di Napoli e Calabria.
A casa?
Sì, no, non a casa. No. I learned all'università perché mi piace la
Art
lingua.
History?
No. Oh, just ho studiato perché mi piace.
Oh.
And so we went to Italy, and I had the same exact experience everywhere. And then we got to Venice, and they're like, okay, so there's a regional Italian here, but there's also Venetian, which – and it was like Venetian was a whole separate, preserved
– Right.
You know,
Venice is very particular.
Very particular.
Yeah.
But it's being, from America where, I mean, you know.
There are regional differences, but they're flattened out a lot.
They're flattened out a lot. And also, because our culture as a whole is just not as old.
Right.
You know, like I imagine there'll be a day in like 500 years where if you go to the South, you'll be like, what's that guy saying? Like, hey, what you guys, come on down. You know, it's all going to be. But. Just in terms of like, because unfortunately the colonization stomped out the actual indigenous history that was in this land. But you go to Italy and it's so mind-blowing to see, oh, this building was built in the 1500s. And under there, that road is 2,000 years old.
No, crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Have you in Rome, have you been to the crypt of the Capuchin monks?
I have.
That was one of the most stunning experiences I've ever had.
What's even better is in Palermo. There's a place where, all these people, there's all these mummies
mm-hmm.
because they were preserved and they're separated by profession because that was the way to, that was like a thing of status.
Mm-hmm.
So all the lawyers are with the lawyers section and the doctors in this section. And,
oh, wow.
And they're all in these caves, still there. And because the embalming and preserving way to preserve them was different in each place. Some are very well preserved and some are falling apart.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty wild.
I think it, you know, my wife.
I forget what it's called, but I.
But it's in Palermo.
Palermo, yeah, in Sicily.
My wife and I like, you know, we just like what would be traditionally considered the macabre things. We like, you know, but I wouldn't, but I would encourage anyone who hasn't been that it's not macabre at all. It's really beautiful because it's a way of expressing this idea of memento mori, where you're, because there's a quote in the first tomb that essentially says, where you are, we once were, where we are, you will be.
Hey. That's a little too much to the point.
Take it easy, monks.
One of the things I liked, the last thing about this cave, and I wish I could remember the name of it, but this thing that some of them are perfectly preserved. There's one of a little girl called La Bambina.
See.
And they go there. She's highlighted because she's so... She looks like, a corpse from yesterday.
It's perfectly preserved.
Yeah. Where there's other ones, like that lawyer over there.
Sure.
He's totally collapsed and he's dust. Now, does that tell us anything?
Is there a certain poetic...
My brother's a lawyer. One of my brothers is a lawyer.
We all have them in
he's
our
He's listening.
Lives. Yeah, I know. We'll get a cease and desist letter. What's your... Because we'll definitely go back to Italy again. I have family there and everything. But what's your favorite part of Rome?
Oh, where I live. I love my neighborhood.
Yeah. Do you live in a really old – like it's pretty old.
Yeah.
What are you excited about now? Like what is – in general sort of what brings you joy? Like what's a simple joy in your life?
Making things with people that I like.
Yeah.
You know, people that inspire me, travel.
And then after you do this, is it on to something else right away?
Yeah, not immediately. I have some things to do. I've got some things planned for next year.
Cool.
Yeah, good projects.
Good.
No,
I'm glad.
I you won't catch me crying today.
That's actually a good... I feel like that's someone should take that and make it the bio of their social media. You won't catch me crying today. Because basically what that says is like, I enjoy what I do. Sure, you get hung up on dumb stuff, but what's the point of it?
Yeah.
You know?
But also you don't want to like to brag either, so.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's, you know, it's not. You don't come off as braggadocious.
I get chatty and I like to talk. You know, this is fun. But at the same time, I think, what the hell am I doing? Shut up. No, you're an actor. People should only know you through your characters.
Of course.
And you, if they know anything about your personal thoughts or, you know, and you don't take a mask or Lou Reed used to always say, I get the name drop here, used to always say, you're too sincere in interviews. You should lie a lot more. It's more fun, and it'll protect you.
But then you won't be able to keep track of all of them.
This is true. Yeah,
but
to be a liar is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
But I'm like, you know, if I sneak, I don't eat it anymore. But I remember once I snuck a bunch of prosciutto in because I'm vegetarian. But I snuck a bunch of prosciutto in a suitcase once.
Uh-huh.
And I'm such a naturally guilty person. I thought, I'm going to get caught. It's like that. I can't lie.
Actor Willem Dafoe arrested for prosciutto thievery.
Right.
Serving time now. But also I would imagine the personal stuff too. You just – it's important for you because if you allow yourself to be consumed by public life, then there's nothing left for you.
Well, you know, I work enough that public life ain't where I live.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm doing publicity now, so I'm chatty and I'm, you know – but that's not my normal day to day.
Well, I can't thank you enough for chatting, coming here and chatting again.
Cool.
Piacere, that's such a nice time. But talking to you, Willem Dafoe.
You do that better than I do.
Oh no, I'm imitating my great grandmother. She talk like this. So if you are Italian, please forgive me if you're like that. Does not the sound. We don't have to sound like a Super Mario.
Listen, I'm Italian now because I took citizenship. So yeah. I like it.
Oh, you did?
They're like, hey. When people see me in Rome sometimes, they you're here on vacation. Do you like Italy? You know, I'm like, hey, I'm Italian. Get you.
Hey, Italian.
Wrap your brain around it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Okay, yeah. Mille grazie. È finito.
Grazie.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.